Hey, you're listening to Lady Lovin'. This is Lo.
It's Jilly.
It's Greta.
And we have a beautiful guest on our show today. The gorgeous and smart and talented Vanessa Scotto. She is a Buddhist psychologist and meditation teacher and a Chinese medicine doctor. So today we are talking about holistic wellness with her, which I think is a great topic as we move into 2016. Don't you all?
I do too.
For sure. We all need to be in touch with ourselves.
It's my favorite. This kind of stuff is my favorite because I love like alternative medicine and healing and self-healing, and I have so many questions.
Say hi, Vanessa.
Hey, everyone. I'm so excited to be here.
We're so excited to have you.
Don't be all quiet over there in the corner. Yeah,
she's got to learn today.
She's meditating. You're right. Actually, tomorrow Vanessa is teaching me how to meditate, but on my back, because I do TM and you do it sitting up. And I've always wanted to learn how to meditate like lying on my back because it's more relaxing. So tomorrow she's teaching me.
I feel like I meditate on my back before I go to bed.
No.
All my thoughts run through my head before I fall asleep.
Yeah, I write my to-do list as I lay down. No, I've been meditating for like almost 20 years, 15 to 20 years. And this is the first style I found over the last few years where you actually get to lay down on your back through most of the meditation. And then you work your way up to sitting. And it's a game changer because you just get so into this deep state of relaxation when you're laying down. Your body surrenders differently. And it's kind of life changing.
It's like when I do yoga, like when you finally get to do vinyasa at the end or shavasana, whatever it's called. And most of the time I can't really get there, but when you do on your back, it's like so amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm like a troubled sleeper, and so I'm excited to do this in bed to like learn how to like
really
do it in bed.
Definitely.
Yeah. I had anxiety was the way I found my way to meditation. I actually had some depression and anxiety in my 20s, and I started doing this, and it's been a progression, but this is probably the most chillaxing I've done, where you're actually just like so grounded and you're rooted into the earth.
Is it actually called chillaxing?
Meditation style, chillaxing.
Learn how to chillax with Vanessa.
I love that.
Yeah.
That needs to be a hashtag.
Hashtag chillaxing.
Chillaxing.
I feel like anxiety typically leads people to meditation. Just saying before we started recording how my dad was the first person that really taught me how to meditate, because I struggled with super bad anxiety and depression my whole entire life. And I, especially as like a early teen, would go into fits of just like crying and mood swings and just not being able to control myself, and like kind of for no reason, which is like even crazy. That's a crazy thing about anxiety, is half the time you're like, there's no reason I should be feeling like a fucking out of control monster. So then my dad was like, you need to meditate and just calm down and take a second to meditate. So he taught me how to do seated meditation, which is just like feet on the ground, just breathing. And I would try and do it for like 10 minutes at a time. But I think that the hardest part about meditating is the actual act of just doing it and committing to doing it for like 10 minutes.
Well, one of the things, you know how they'll say like, even if you do 5 minutes of meditation a day, it can be really good for you. And it's true. It can be very relaxing to your nervous system, just even one deep breath. But at the same time, what most people will notice if you're meditating like 5 to 10 minutes is you kind of run your to-do list the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Like you're sitting there, you're stressing, you're thinking about the same old thing. You start to actually get sick of yourself and you get annoyed. And then why would you want to do it? Like the motivation begins to lapse.
Yeah.
So for me, one of the reasons why you do like meditation retreat or you do these kinds of other styles of guided meditation is so you can reach some kind of a transcendent, like,
yeah,
super relaxed state. And then even if you don't hit it every time, you know what you're aiming for, and it inspires you to want to get back to that place.
That's always been like my problem with meditation, is like every time I go to do it, I'm just like so sick of myself. I'm just like, whatever.
Exactly.
Like this chick again, you know what I mean?
Right. This bitch.
Yeah, I've never like reached that place where you're able to like cross over and like really feel a difference.
But like they say that 90% of your thoughts are recycled. So
yeah.
90% of the shit you think, you're just like running the same old scripts. And it's really annoying. And that's one of the perks of meditation is you're actually supposed to meditate and get sick of yourself. And get so sick of yourself that you give up your games, right? That's kind of part of the idea.
Oh,
so
that's like you're interesting. Beating yourself at your own self.
Yeah, because you start to realize it's an ego trip, right? And you're like, I'm so fucking sick of this, that you start to try to let go. You start to surrender. You start to see the whole idea of meditation isn't just to relax. I mean, that's nice, but we should all just fucking take a nap or go to the beach. Like, we should just slow down our lives a little more.
Right.
The point of meditation is to go beyond the self that you know, to discover who you really are and what else there is in this world, in this universe. So when you take it from that perspective, you can start to see, like, that's interesting, because if I watch my thoughts, I'm like, oh, these are the games I'm playing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like what DJ Khaled says, you just played yourself.
Yeah. So I have a question, because I can tend to be like a little like obsessive compulsive, not like I touch doorknobs all the time, but my thoughts are very obsessive. I have the same ones over and over again, and I have a really hard time like breaking that cycle. And it's kind of like the white elephant, right? Like, don't think of the white elephant, and then all you're going to do is think of that white elephant. So do you think that meditation can help with that? Because that's something that I really struggle with, is like the same thing just like runs through my mind and it starts to drive me crazy.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty common. I mean, one could say that that's sort of the root of anxiety, is we have this thought we can't get out of our mind that we may know is not for our like best good. And maybe there's not even a use for thinking about it, but we can't stop, right? So I think it's really common. So one aspect of meditation is mental training. It's mind training, right? So if you think about how, I think this is the kind of meditation that you did, Greta, is like you're sitting, you're breathing, the thoughts will pop in. Everybody thinks while they're meditating. It's like a fallacy that you stop thinking. So a thought pops in and you train yourself to come back to the breath or the candle or any object of attention. And what you're doing in that action of having the thought and then coming back to the breath is you're actually building a muscle that allows you to control your mind. So then over time, and it's actually like it's going to change you
your neural pathways.
Like so you won't, you'll build the muscle to always shift. And over time, you start to change the storylines, because meditation actually turns off the storytelling part of your brain.
Oh, interesting.
So like if you're meditating and you're trying to get like back to that breathing and, you know, focus in the candle, would you like recommend like saying like candle like a million times? Or just like looking at that thing and like saying that, so that's all you think about? Is that like a way to train it?
It's a style, right? So there's a style where people even go thinking and they label their thought and they go thinking, or they'll say breathing to shift their focus back. I think with meditation, there's a few different styles. There's mindfulness where you just sit and you focus on the breath. You can focus on the body. You can focus on candles. You can focus on mantras like TM does. There's a lot of different styles. So I found like I play with them, and with my clients, I adjust according to who they are and kind of how their mind works. Like some of my practices have been very image based. And if you have a vivid imagination, using imagery is super powerful. But if you don't have that kind of mind, that's not going to be a good access point for you.
I went to a therapist once and they like brought out like a sandbox with all these objects, and I had to put like all of the objects like to say how I was feeling. Like there was like an airplane in a building. I was like, yeah, but like my mind, there's like not enough objects for like what's happening.
There was an airplane and a building.
It was like very weird.
Like very.
Was this like a child therapist? No, I was like older. I was like 19. It was really funny.
It's actually pretty cool, because it's like, I mean, the idea is that most of our traumas and our patterns and everything, it's all in our subconscious. It's in the unconscious.
So, yeah.
You know, we all think we know what's the matter with us, and we're like, why isn't anything changing? I know what's the matter with me. I can talk about what's the matter with me, but yet I'm still going through all that same shit.
Right.
Because it's your subconscious and your unconscious patterning that you have to change. And symbols are one way that we can access like the underneath. So there's like, for example, my childhood was pretty normal. Like, putting it in the perspective of the world, I was lucky, but I still was totally stressed as a kid, and I was afraid, and I had a lot of issues, right? So consciously, I'll be like, I had a fine childhood. Mm-hmm. But unconsciously, I may put an airplane next to a building and be like, yeah. Oh, shit.
Fuck.
Yeah. I'm gonna go
shit's
down.
About yeah. to get cray.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would never, like, if I saw an airplane in a building in a sandbox, I would never be like, and the airplane is soaring through a beautiful blue sky.
Yeah.
Like, it was so it's weird. A beautiful building. I'm like, doomsday. Like, that's my mind. That's yeah. how I work.
Me too.
I don't know. It's like
catastrophic thinking, my therapist said.
Congratulations.
For me personally,
I had
like,
a breakthrough.
I have a lot of like highs and lows. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like a very like extreme person. Like, I'll either go too much or too little, and I don't know how to do like the middle, which is why like I should probably meditate.
I middle think ground. That, I think that Jilly, a great thing about Jilly is like she is able to like see this big picture and then like write. Or like mark steps that you should logically take to get there. And it's amazing that she's capable Thanks, of Greta. Doing it with everything, whether it's like getting a cup of coffee or like or like winning like an Oscar. Like yeah. Jilly will be able to like break down for you from like day one to like day 327, like exactly what you need to do to get there. But I think that like that way of thinking can be so overwhelming.
Yes.
And I think that
yeah.
like
100%.
And I think my problem, which is the opposite of Jilly's, is like I will see this big idea and it'll be like dangling, you know, like a puffy cloud or something, and I'm like, well, there's no way I'm getting there, so I might as well just stay on the ground. Yeah. And just like whatever.
Yeah, it's true. Well, first of all, Jilly, you'd probably make an excellent life coach with that skill set.
Oh, thanks.
So if you're looking for an alternate career, you know where to go.
You know, I am a philosopher on Instagram.
She is.
She is.
But they're all
you
pretty
have
negative.
You have to follow her account. It's notes to my selfie, but it's like the number two, and Jilly writes like mad
little life
jokes.
Anecdotes.
Yeah. They're really
I'm a,
funny.
I'm a realist.
She I is. Love it. You're a realist, but yeah. then it sounds like you're a dreamer. And I feel like there's this like yeah. interesting balance we have to have between being grounded but also aiming for the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how do we do that? How do we not get attached to our dreams in a way that we're going to get disappointed if we don't reach them, but still keep, you know, thriving and using that kind of creative push.
I feel like I'm a realist in terms of like human relationships and like the way that people act in certain moments, but then I have like larger dreams of like career and that sort of thing. But like I can like break people down because I feel like most people are just filled with bullshit and they're like too afraid to be like open.
Wait, is that a realist or is that a cynic?
You're a cynic,
you know,
Jill.
I think it's a realist, though.
No, especially with dudes, Jill, you're always like, oh, like, rah, 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 rah. I'm like, Jill, actually, that dude likes
like
you
that?
And wants to take you on a date. Can you just, like, calm down and see the bright side? Like,
I guess,
come on, man.
That's true.
I think that it's just, like, with meditation and with doing any kind of self-help, you know, I think self-help, first of all, gets a really bad reputation. I think that if you say that you're, like, reading a self-help book or going to a meditation class, I think that it just, for some reason, I don't know why, it has a really bad,
the stigma.
Yeah.
Even when they, like, show it on TV and shit, they're always, like, the person in the self-help book, and then they're like, oh, I'm getting, like, 40 recommendations to buy, like, these other 40 self-help books, and then it spirals.
Do
you
remember the Sex and the City episode yeah. where Charlotte needs a self-help book, and she's, like, in the bookstore, and the person, all the people in self-help are, like, crying,
yeah.
and the guy's like, do you need help, miss? And she's like, oh, travel?
Yeah.
Gardening? And she, like, pretends For that she's sure. not there, like, to get the book she needs, so she orders it on Amazon, and then it shows up in the mail. That's like so classic.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, it's like that's the way that it's portrayed, but it's like it's not like people crying in the corner.
You know what though? I think 2016 is going to be the year of like championing mental health.
Yeah.
Even like BuzzFeed a couple weeks ago did like a week of like mental health week. And, you know, all of their articles were about, you know, like depression and anxiety and all these things you can do to help yourself. So I think that like the stigma of these things is like really being removed because it's really a universal issue.
I think that there is an expectation that we have as humans that we should have it figured out.
Right.
I think that we think we should be able to wake up happy in the morning. And if we don't, we wonder what's the matter with us. And we think that we should be able to just be rational enough to understand what's happening and then change it. And I actually don't think that's how it works. Like, even if you look at people like, let's say, Tony Robbins, who's a very successful, by kind of every account, person. He wakes up every morning. He meditates. He does a breathing thing. He jumps in cold water. I think we actually have to prime ourselves to be happy and fulfilled and peaceful human beings, because the world is a crazy place, and actually it's not easy being human.
No.
Yeah.
I think that there are just so many things that happen to us in our life that are just totally out of our control. Exactly. And I think that it's about doing the proper stuff to manage yourself in those times, and like what you can do to care for yourself. And I think what you're saying about Tony Robbins, you know, waking up, meditating, breathing, doing a cold plunge, then going and probably eating like a beautiful yes. meal, and then probably like, I don't fucking know, putting on like honey on his face or some shit, I don't know. But I think that's really hard for so many people to begin to understand how they could even access that kind of like a lifestyle with themselves, you know?
Yeah, maybe because it sounds like Tony Robbins has all this time, but I figured out a way to meditate and exercise every morning. I think most of us can, but I think what's missing is once we have that expectation that we should be able to do it, the motivation isn't there. We just need to beat ourselves up. When you, it's like with anything, if you see exercise works for you, you are so much more likely to do it.
Right.
You see meditation works or vitamins work and healthy eating works. Like once you see that, we do a better job of taking care of ourselves. But until we see it, sometimes it's that leap of faith, and the leap of faith gets blocked by some like idea or notion that we should have it all figured out already.
Yeah. Right.
What do you think, for me personally, like I have ups and downs with how I treat myself, and I think everyone does. Yeah. Like, I have times where I will be amazing to myself, and I will be eating so clean, exactly what I should be eating, exercising, getting my sleep, being peaceful in my mind, and like respecting myself. And then I'll just have times where I'm like total opposite. I'll just like eat shit that I know makes me feel bad. I'll, you know, beat myself up mentally. I'll be lazy. What would you suggest is a good starting point for someone to make like the first little change in like a meditation practice or like any kind of a healing practice? Like, what is a good baseline thing that anyone can do anywhere without needing anything?
Well, just to even comment on what you were saying, because I think we all go through that. Probably everyone.
Yeah, the ups and downs for sure.
Yeah, the ups and downs.
For sure.
And that interesting balance of like liking ourselves, hating ourselves, taking care of ourselves, abusing ourselves. Like, I think we can all go through that. So the one thing that I have found really important after Chinese medicine, psychology, meditation, all of this, is that your body is the gateway to peace of mind. So we forget that a lot. Like, we forget that our body influences the way we think. And it really does begin there. If your body is in a state of disarray, if you're neurochemically imbalanced, hormonally imbalanced, if your body is like tense and kind of locked up, you actually don't have peaceful thoughts. They kind of go together. So the way it works is like your brain reads your body and goes, is everything okay? And if your body's chill, your brain's like, cool, I'm happy. And it thinks thoughts that are more reflective of that. So if you're in a really stressed out state, we can get into like, and who knows what the trigger is. Maybe a guy said something to you. Maybe you just ate a cheeseburger and you kind of like started a pattern. But once that happens, the main thing we can do is come back to like creating ease in our body, whatever that means for us. If it's breathing, if it's yoga, if it's eating better. But once you get a hold of like creating some balance and alignment in your body, then you can start to change the way you think. But if you try before that, like, you know, you might say to yourself, Vanessa, stop being such a bitch to yourself. This isn't working. This isn't useful. But I haven't created ease in my body. It's almost like a no-win situation because I'm in survival mode, and you can't reason with someone in survival mode.
Right.
The thing that really helped me like get that like voice out of my head was reading this book called The Untethered Soul. And it's about the inner roommate in your head. And like, if that was a real person in life, you wouldn't be friends with that person. You'd be like, this person's an asshole. Yet like you're treating yourself that way. So it's kind of cool because you like start to realize, you know, the way in which you communicate with yourself and how you're doing that, and just to be nicer.
Well, the voices we have in our head are incredibly toxic half the time.
Yes, I hate them.
Some of us are blessed, but like, first of all, we absorb them from our childhood. So our role models teach us, and you even just download them from parents and what they had in their life, and they downloaded it from their parents.
Yeah.
So we have all of that kind of stuff.
But it's so crazy, and like I do understand that, but at the same time, like I feel like I was really lucky to be raised with my mother was very much so like, you want to do something, go and do it. Like, you want to, whatever you want to do, stop fucking talking about it, stop complaining about it, and just start doing it, and then like it'll work itself out. So like I do have that mentality, and I was raised with that, which I feel so lucky for, but I still have a voice in my head that's like you can't do that, you're a loser, you're lazy, go home, you're not funny, you're not smart, you're whatever, you know, you're like fat, you're ugly, all this shit.
It's also a product of like society, because it's like, you know, it's even like another, going back to like, this is kind of heavy, but like people like aren't born like racist, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like a product of like
your environment.
Exactly. And like that is so much too about your personality, is like, you know, in high school, how are you treated? How did you treat yourself? You know what I mean? Like it's so much of like that as well that has to do with like the way that in which you treat yourself.
Well, I think mental health is complex. I think that's why you look at it holistically. So first of all, it depends on your physiology.
Can you give a brief definition of what you mean by looking at it holistically? Like the
so holistically, okay, let's say for example in Chinese medicine, the reason why I was drawn towards it is they always said that the body, the mind, and the spirit are inextricably linked. You cannot rule out one piece when you're looking at how to create health within an organism. So that if we look at, for example, a cold, right? We certainly have to look at the state of someone's mind. Are they in emotional balance? What is that doing to their immune system? How is that affected? Are they spiritually fulfilled? Do they feel a connection to themselves? Do they feel a connection to their world? So you would analyze somebody through all of these different lenses. And I think sometimes with mental health, we can get really compartmentalized. We can think either it's physiological and has nothing to do with your lifestyle, your psychology, your history, your spiritual practice, or lack thereof. Or you can get a psychologist who thinks it has everything to do with your childhood, and they're paying no attention to the fact that you're eating sugar with every meal, and you know, yeah, you're smoking pot 3 times a day, and that you're probably just messing with your neurochemistry and it's not working for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we look at mental health, we have to kind of look at it from all of these different levels and say, well, what's happening with this individual? You know, there's enough research to show that 20% of the population are highly sensitive people, they call them, meaning they're very introspective, they're very empathetic, they pick up on everybody's signals, everybody's feelings, they're super in touch with themselves, and those people tend to be highly self-critical.
That's the, you know, story that of my fucking
someone
life.
Someone broke up with me once because they said I had too many feelings.
Well, okay. It's such a societal, yeah. That's, and I was like,
that's my issue too. I'm like, you know, God forbid I feel something for right. you, because I've been sleeping with you for 6 months. I've been spending time with you. Like, I'm not a fucking robot. Give me a break.
There was actually like an interesting thing in the New York Times that just came out recently. I sent it to you, Lo, about how like a lot of women are, you know, they're like built to be more emotional than men, and a lot of women are like overly medicating themselves because they think that they shouldn't be feeling all these different ways, but it's like that's completely normal. You just have to like be able to process it.
Well, this is kind of the story, I think, of our human experience in this culture today, you know, that I think therefore I am, and everybody's focused on you kind of having it together and being really pragmatic and not having a feeling and not having an emotion. And I wanted that when I was young because my emotions were making me crazy.
Yeah, it seems easier in many ways. Like, it to not feel, and this is part of my New Year's resolution, to like, I feel like after my mom died, I really shut off so much of my like ability to just like
love,
feel and get love. That's like my biggest issue, is I'm very good at giving my friends love, but it's really hard for me to like love myself and to receive love from others. But I think that so much of coping just with life in general, you're like, well, if I don't feel anything, It's easier. Yeah. So it's like, sure, I'll take that pill and shut that down. Great. Like, smoke a bunch of pot and sit on my couch and eat carbs. Yes.
I think in the beginning, when people start meditating, this was my experience. I was suicidal at a certain point. I had so many feelings. I could not even handle them. And then you start to do things like meditation. I think the first thing you hope is that you're not going to have feelings, that you're going to be so zen. You're going to go beyond the place of being affected by life. Mm-hmm. And it's only like as I've had I've matured and I'm 42 now, and I've had a lot of experiences that I've come to realize it's the fact that you feel that makes life rich, and that's what makes us human.
Yeah,
and definitely. The fact that people judge you for having feelings is a big fucking problem,
right?
Because it means they're shut down. And so I think it's great that that's your New Year's resolution. That's kind of like an ongoing one for me, is how can we open up more and more? Because I think you have what I call heart fatigue. It's like when your heart gets so hurt, it's exhausted, and it's like, I can't take another risk. Well, I can't open.
I used to try and explain. That's actually such a good word for it, because after my mom died, I just felt so exhausted. And I would try and explain it to someone where I would like be in a room and I would be around people and I would know that I was there, but it was almost like I was watching myself be in this room because I was just so tired. I just couldn't even do anything.
Yeah.
And like I couldn't, you know, talk. And it just kept on lurking and lurking. It was like the Grim Reaper, like, pulling me to hell. You know what I'm saying? Like, slowly just, like, drawing me in, or like a snake just, like, slithering up, you know, my spine.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very powerful experience. Thanks for sharing it. I think when we've had heartbreak of different kinds, whether we lose someone in a relationship or we lose someone because they pass on, that's the most vulnerable thing a human being goes through. And it can be so weary on us, and it can happen young in life in all these different ways where we perceive loss or we perceive harm. And we start to armor up, right? We start to layer up. We start to try to figure out a way where we're not affected by life and where we're not affected by others. But of course, and it's because we're exhausted and we're just, it's simple. It's like, it's our nature to try to protect ourselves from being harmed, right? But over time, we start to realize, like, you have that observational part that you just described. You're watching yourself, and you start to realize, like, I'm shutting down to a lot. Mm-hmm. Because it's not, we can't shut down a little. We can't choose. We can't just shut down to grief. We shut down to grief and joy.
Yeah.
We shut down to bliss, right? Yeah. And we're like, holy shit, I'm actually not taking in. And then you get even more exhausted because you're not, like, you're not nourished.
Yeah.
Well, and I also really think that, like, feeling happy is just as vulnerable as feeling sad.
That's definitely interesting. For a lot of people that done therapy with me, it's more vulnerable.
To let yourself be happy. If you were so used to being depressed your whole life, and then you're like, I need to, like, make a change and I'm going to be happy, that's the hardest thing.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Can we talk a little bit about, before we move on to sexploration, I'd love to hear a little bit more about sort of like your diet, Vanessa, and like how you sort of like what your perspective on food is and how that can kind of affect, you know, like the whole system. Because you touched on that briefly, but I'm interested to hear a little bit more about that.
So, you know, once I met this doctor in Bali, and he was a Buddhist and a Hindu, like a lot of people in Bali were, an energy worker. He was very profound. And he was saying, like, Vanessa, when you counsel people, I don't love it because you just keep talking about all their old stories, and they can turn it around in their head and they can start to believe that they're real and they're just our interpretations, right? And he said, before that, you have to start with the breath and the blood and then the energy, and then you get to the stories because you have a place of alignment. And I agree with that from this perspective. When our body is out of balance, it's very hard to create a new perspective. Mm-hmm. Because those thoughts keep following the body. So I like to start to look at the diet. I'm a big believer that you have to individualize how you eat. I do not think that there are one-size-fits-all approaches. However, almost consistently, sugar is a problem for people with anxiety and depression or PMS or any of those things, sugar is probably the most problematic agent in someone's diet. So I think if anyone is actually like feeling stressed there, or you're not comfortable in your skin, or you're, you know, anxious and you're having these negative thoughts, the first place I begin is usually with an elimination diet where you take out gluten, processed foods, and sugar of every kind, like agave, honey, Nutrisweet,
fruit,
everything. Not fruit. I'm not a big, I don't go after fruit because I think it's too complicated. I think you can lose people that way. But you try to make sure that people aren't doing things like sweetened soy milk with fruit in the morning and a smoothie and like things, because we are such big addicts, I mean, myself included, that people will find a way to sneak it in.
Right. So, not even realizing it too.
Yeah, it can go under the radar. So for me, like even when you're meditating, if your brain is really like fogged out because your diet's not right for your body, it's actually hard to concentrate, and it's hard to be comfortable in your skin when your body is not in a state of ease.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think for me, my diet, I had to change my diet so much when I got lupus because I was just in such, like, my body was a fucking mess and I like couldn't move my joints, and changing my diet and like figuring out what worked for me was like what then put me in like a mental place where I could actually like start healing myself.
Oh, it was a game changer for me. When I was starting to get suicidal thinking, I'm very aware of myself, and because I understood Chinese medicine, I started to track myself. 48 hours after I had corn syrup, consistently, I started to get depressed and suicidal.
And corn syrup is one of those things that is in fucking everything.
Yeah.
Corn, like corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, corn starch, like all corn products. And there's so many GMOs and all of that shit. It's insane.
Yeah, I think food is, you kind of want to start with the fundamentals, right? So if you're not feeling 100% the way you want to feel, and you're not, even if you're just not having optimal thinking, I think you always can start with a diet. And if you go towards something simple like anti-inflammatory and low sugar, and just try it, and you do it for 2 weeks. So you take out the common allergens. It's an elimination diet. You can look it up. It's very easy. And you go towards anti-inflammatory, which is taking out starches. You just do it for 2 weeks. You'll get enough of a baseline to see, this is who I am when I have no substances in my body that commonly can create brain fog, fatigue, muscle pain, anxiety, neurochemical imbalances. And then you have kind of this like baseline to judge, so you can start to see how food affects you individually.
What do you think about like alcohol and drugs? Like, my personal opinion on like how everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people go and do like drugs at a music festival and all of that, like, I think those like screw up your total brain functionality and the way that your brain, like, just your whole system,
the chemistry,
yeah, the chemistry of your brain. I think it's like way bigger than like, oh, I'm gonna do this for the night and it's gonna be, I think it's like a large issue.
I mean, I can only speak to my personal experience because I haven't, you know, done a big, deep research study on it. But I've done like genetic testing so I can see what I'm predisposed to. And I can say that when I do drugs, it fucks me up. It totally reorganizes my neurochemistry.
Are you in like the meditation vein of like ayahuasca and like stuff like that?
I did it once. I am not in that direction though. I'm all for anything that gives you a taste of transcendence, because once you get a taste, you can develop faith, and that can be a bridge for you. So when people do shrooms or they do ayahuasca or they do peyote and they go, oh my God, there's something more than I know. There's something, and I am bigger than I thought. I'm all for that. What I'm not for is when people begin to use it as a crutch, because I think it's just, it's another way of escaping. Like, we're always trying to escape feelings, whether you do it through being overly productive or whether you try to do it from being high all the time and like getting out of this reality. To me, especially from a Buddhist point of view, they're all just crutches and they're not changing you. They're just a way of escaping what you're uncomfortable with. So anything used to an extreme can become a problem, but anything used, like if you use those kinds of
as a tool,
yeah, to have a new gateway experience, wonderful.
I could never do ayahuasca simply because I hate, like, throwing up is to me one of like the worst things in the world, and I know that when you do it, and you, all my friends that have done it, you like barf and then you trip and then you're like with a shaman and all this stuff, and for me that experience sounds so stressful.
Yeah,
like, nothing about that experience sounds like relaxing or
terrifying.
Like,
well, it's definitely, listen, it's meant to be a very deep spiritual journey. It's definitely not meant to be relaxing. That's even the funny part about meditation. In all honesty, it will relax you, but it's not meant to be relaxing. It's
right,
meant
yeah.
to help you see through the veil of life, like to get past whatever ego bullshit you have going on and whatever beliefs you have. So ayahuasca is like meant to be this super sacred
I know.
Journey.
And it's supposed to be intense, and it's supposed yeah. to be all these things that we all run from, which yeah, is like what you're saying bending. About yeah. meditation. You're like sitting there and you're like, I fucking hate myself. I don't want to do this. It's this, I guess it's the same shit.
Well, the best thing I think we all can do if we like break it down really simply is we can learn to be more comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a lot of what we run from is we don't like feeling uncomfortable. Whether it's like feeling sad or anxious, or whether it's being in a situation we don't like, or, you know, throwing up and whatever it is. And as long as we're afraid of being uncomfortable, we start to over control. We start to get tense. We start to get upset when we're uncomfortable. We start to like, you know, I guess, I think just try to micromanage our lives. And so the way I think life changes when you meditate regularly is you build your tolerance for discomfort.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there any kind of like YouTube? I know that there's so much access that we have now with the internet. Would you give anyone a guided meditation YouTube video recommendation?
Or like yeah. an app?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people use Headspace. I happen to follow this guy called Reggie Ray, and he has a podcast I listen to all the time. That's the style of laying down meditation I love the most. But if you're a beginner, there's two people I really like, and you can find them on YouTube. The first one is Thich Nhat Hanh, Thichnhat Hanh, Thich Nhat Hanh. He's a Vietnamese meditator, and he's so beautiful. Mm. He's the one they have at ABC Carpet. You always see his calligraphy.
Yeah.
His meditations are really, really lovely, really simple. And the second one is a woman named Sharon Salzberg, and she does something called loving kindness meditation, or they'll call it Metta, M-E-T-T-A. And that's a really good one if you don't like yourself that much.
Cool.
It's a really good one to heal that.
Great. That's great.
I like that.
Thank you so much. I think we should move on to sexploring.
Okay.
Today we are discussing how to be, I guess, mindful while you're having sex, how to be in the moment.
Yeah. How mindfulness will elevate your sex life.
Yeah. How just, you know, getting real inside yourself will help you.
While someone's inside yourself.
Get outside of yourself. Yeah. All the different ways to be.
Fuck your mind while yeah. someone's fucking you.
You be in touch with your insides.
Good one, girls. Good one. Good ones yeah. today. Good ones.
I'm trying to think what else we could say here. Just, you know, just really trying to be like, have that out of body experience.
While so, someone's in your body?
Yeah.
Okay, stop.
We did it, Greta.
Fucking monsters. So what does this even mean? Mindfulness. Like while you're having sex, what does that mean? Being able to like focus on the being present in the moment,
to focus on the other person's body part or yourself,
to focus on like orgasming.
Well, no, that would be like focusing yeah, on like a future that. State. So as soon as you have a Ooh, goal,
wow.
you're already removed from the
moment. Strike one. What not to do? That's focus on the orgasm.
You're like, when are we getting to that orgasm yeah. thing you're giving me?
I'm like, thanks for kissing me, but can we just fast forward till yeah. I come? Great.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. But mindfulness is being in the present moment, right? Which means mm-hmm. you're not focused on a goal or a future state. So a couple of things, like women don't orgasm sometimes, that we know. Actually, I want to say it's like 30 or 40% of women have never had an orgasm. There's men who get premature ejaculation and things like that. And it's not uncommon that one of the things that they're grappling with is just overthinking.
Yeah.
They're anxious. Like, how does my body look? Are you liking this? Am I going to like it? When am I going to get to my orgasm? Why aren't you doing it like that? And we're kind of in that brain chatter. And it I don't know how to describe this, but when we think too much, what it does functionally is it takes us out of our body.
Totally.
Yeah.
I feel that. I have experienced that where like your mind is just like going about something stupid in the moment, and it totally removes you from what you should be doing, which is enjoying yourself.
What is a way to like get your mind back and to be present
while you're there?
Okay. Yeah.
I had this. Sometimes if you've had trauma in your life, like any kind of sexual trauma, and it could be like verbal, it could be you dated badly, and it could be like real legit painful sexual trauma, but anytime like that, like people can dissociate during sex too, so you're kind of gone and you're up in your mind, or you can even be orgasming sometimes and still not be present, so that you can have like hot sex but not have intimate sex. That's also possible. And so one of the things that I've used, because I had that problem, and as I was like healing myself through it, was, it sounds strange, but I would put my hand on the guy's like chest, and I would just think, this is this man, and this is his heart, and he is with me. And I would just kind of like, I guess, trip out on the fact that I was with this person and it was special. And what that would do is that would get me a present and also appreciating the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I literally have been, I've had sex before where in my mind I've thought the most like fucked up things, like I thought to myself, like, you hate this guy, and like the craziest shit, and like sometimes that's what gets me off. What the fuck is wrong with me?
I don't know. For some weird reason, like when you're having sex, it's like an odd moment of reflection where like your mind just runs.
Yeah. At least
I'm always just like, why am I here?
Well, just I guess it depends. If you legitimately hate the guy, that's one thing.
It would be in instances where, like, I would love the person, and I would just be like, I fucking hate you.
I think that's more about yourself. I think that's you reflecting on yourself and being like, I don't like myself, so I'm going to take it out on this man that I love.
Well, it could be fantasy play. I mean, you know, sadism, masochism.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of fantasy play.
Yeah, there is a lot.
I love masochism.
A lot of fantasy play.
I mean, you can get with that from any angle. I think, you know, the interesting thing is, what kind of sex do we want to have? I mean, me personally, I can have sex with people I didn't know well, and I can enjoy myself and I can orgasm. It's not, there are some women that's not possible for. They have to feel really close and safe.
Could you, when was the first time, and tell me if this is a question you don't want to answer. I have never orgasmed vaginally. And when, was it hard for you to get to that point? I feel like that's such a mental state for so many women to like let go like that, and to be comfortable with another, with your partner like that.
It is a letting go. No, I can orgasm vaginally and am good at it. There is a,
but are you good at it because of your brain?
Fuck you, Vanessa.
I know.
Vanessa's just so connected with herself that she's just living the dream.
In my mind, I'm imagining Vanessa like having sex, and I'm like, I bet that's some, like, this is what I'm saying. It's Magic
Mike
sex.
Some real shit. Yeah.
There, you watch Magic Mike and you look at Channing Tatum and you're like, there is a whole other world of sex out there that I don't know. I'm looking at you and I'm like, there is a whole other world of sex out there that I don't know.
Listen, that is why I'm taking hip hop dance classes.
Next level sex.
Yeah.
So wait.
How do you
get to that point? You have a vaginal orgasm.
I actually think that it does have to do with being connected to your body. You have to be able to breathe into your pelvic floor, and you have to be able to control your pelvic floor.
Where, first of all,
how do you control? What is your pelvic floor?
Push down a little on your pelvic floor. Okay, you know your pelvic floor is the muscles, right?
Yeah.
Like where you would do a Kegel. And if you actually contract and then lightly push down and contract and lightly push down, you'll start to play with it, and you can actually create a vaginal orgasm that way.
Sometimes I feel like I don't even know what a vaginal orgasm could potentially feel like. So sometimes I feel like I'm like, maybe, and I've only felt this way with this person that I'm actually seeing right now, because he makes me feel very comfortable, and I feel like I'm at a point where I'm like ready to experience this, but I don't know what it's supposed to feel like.
It feels like amazing.
I think you'll know.
Yeah, it feels like amazing. Same way as like you knew when you had a clitoral orgasm, like you.
Yeah, but I started doing that when I was like 7.
Yeah, you know. First of all, I think
you'll probably know the difference.
Yeah, I think you'll
know. Not a lot of women have vaginal orgasms, so there's that. And maybe it has something to do with where your G-spot lies. Like, there could be an anatomical piece, I think.
Your shit could be fucked up.
I'm just kidding. Guys, I don't have a G-spot.
I was born without a G-spot. I mean, no, just kidding.
But I do think that if you're in touch with your body, it goes a long way to surrendering. I mean, don't you feel like to have that? Because, like, when you have a vaginal orgasm, I mean, maybe you guys have had this from clitoral, like, you get a full body orgasm. Like, it goes up through your belly, up into your chest. Like,
yeah.
That's when they used to have Taoists and tantric practitioners in Buddhism use sex as a gateway for spirituality, because you, like, let go of your mind, you completely surrender, and that moment you open up all these energy pathways and you can reach nirvana or bliss. And so it's like they use it as a tool to get a sense of transcendence. But to do that, you actually have to, like, open. There's a way you have to kind of open energetically and receive, like we were talking about before. And that happens, I think, a little bit muscularly. Like, I think we think that our orgasm is more dependent on other people than it is. I think our orgasm is probably at more of like a 60-40 situation, 40 us, 60 them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think my problem is that I just, like, don't know how to surrender myself.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
You can, though. You can't. We can't put can't.
True, but I just, at this moment in my time, I can't surrender.
You guys, totally off topic, but Jillie and I worked out together before this, and Jillie was like, I can't do this, I can't do this, and I was like, Jillie, we're going to take out can't from your vocabulary, and you know what? She did.
I did. It was really hard.
And you did it.
I had to lift these kettlebells.
And this is going to be what happens for you in sex.
Thanks, Greta.
Surrender.
I have to surrender.
Well, they say sex is a metaphor for everything. I mean, the way you eat is a metaphor. The way you pray is a metaphor. The way you have sex is a metaphor. So there you go. Now you know that a good 2016 goal is to learn how to surrender.
I'm just going to be a damsel in distress.
No.
I'm just going to walk down the street. Take me, New York.
I dig that. Who's our lady loving today?
I would like to know who you think, like, a pioneer, a female pioneer of meditation and health and wellness is.
I mean, I think that it's going to be old school. It's not anybody like Gabby Bernstein or anyone like that.
We can do some research.
Yeah, go a little old school. I would check out Pema Chodron.
Pema Chodron. She's our lady loving today.
Is she still alive?
She's still alive, yeah. She's still around, still kicking it, still writing good books.
Pema, thank you.
I dig that.
I'm going to look you up.
We all will.
Yeah. Vanessa, we're so happy to have you on the show today. This was, like, really dope.
I feel like we just sat through a therapy session.
Right.
It's true. How much do we owe you, Vanessa?
Through my therapy session.
It's true. So, Vanessa has a private practice in Miami and New York. And how can people find you, Vanessa, if they, like, want to get in touch or they, like, you know,
you
want to work with you?
You can find me on my website at VanessaScotto.com, or you can find me on Instagram at Vanessa Scotto, and that's VanessaScotto. This was so fun.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Check her out.
Thanks, y'all.
Okay, see you guys.